Thanks, my name's Matt. I'm a caller. Start a timer so I don't go over here. I want to thank the Valley Group for asking me to come share tonight. I appreciate the opportunity to get to be a part of my recovery. My sobriety date is May 1st, 2018. It wasn't of my doing, it was a God-given thing. But I have a sponsor, my sponsor has a sponsor, and I sponsor other men who are also alcoholics. Like Jim said, I grew up in southeastern Connecticut. This is also where I got sober. I think from a very early age, the best description that I've heard in these rooms that I can come up with that would explain me was that, it seemed to me that everyone in life had been given a manual or an instruction booklet or some kind of rule book on how life works, how to make friends, how to fit in the world, and just how to be a person. And somehow they forgot to give it to me. And I didn't know where I fit in. I didn't know who I was or how to interact with people. And from a very early age, I was frightened of just about everything. I didn't realize it necessarily. But I didn't. I wanted people to see and to know that I existed, but I didn't want to talk to anyone, and I didn't want anyone around me, and I was terrified. As I went through life, that continued until high school, when I started drinking with some guys that I was hanging out with. I was into like punk and hardcore, and I started playing with a band. And that scene, there's a lot of alcohol and drugs around. And I jumped into that and, helped me right off the bat. Helped me not only be able to be on stage in front of a bunch of people, but it helped me deal with the fact that I was afraid to talk to people. And when I drank, I felt like none of that mattered. Or at the very least, I just didn't care. Sorry, my throat was dry. Anyways, that went on for a while. Part of that scene, I think it was almost a rite of passage of who could drink the most. Like everybody out trying to outdo each other. And so my goal very quickly became to try to be the best at what I wanted to do, and that was to get drunk and play music. But from the get-go, I regularly overshot the mark. I can't think of a time in my life when I didn't drink with the sole intention of getting drunk. Even in sobriety, I still don't understand that people consume alcohol without that intention. It doesn't make any sense to me. That's what it was for in my mind. That lifestyle continued. I traveled a lot with music and with other musicians. And wherever I went, my goal was to drink as much as I could and to be what I thought was maybe the life of the party. The party continued, and a lot of people I know went different ways. You know, people started having relationships, having kids, getting married, going to school, getting jobs. You know, all the things that I guess normal people do with their lives when they start growing up. And I couldn't understand why they didn't want to just stick around and keep the party going. Because that's all I wanted to do. And I didn't want to take any responsibility for anything. I had this underlying sense of entitlement that I should be given whatever I want whenever I want it. And if you're in my way, I'm going to get it. Generally, that just revolved around drinking and drug use. But, you know, I carried it into other aspects of my life. Alcohol and drinking, doing what I was doing was fun for a long time. But then it was fun with consequences, and then it was just consequences. I used to love, I bartended in bars that you know, cater to the same kind of music and stuff that I was into. So I was still around that a lot, but I kind of started trying to coast on this whole idea of what I thought I was, who I thought I was, you know, whatever, a legend in my own mind, like, don't you know who I am and what I've done? And nobody cared, and they stopped caring. But in my mind, I thought that people should, and I thought people should pay attention to me, and when they didn't, it upset me, and I drank more, and I used more. And, you know, eventually I got really wrapped up in non-AA-approved substances that gave me the opportunity to drink even more. And I ran with that for a really long time. And eventually, that party, there was no one left at the party. It was just me. And I was just drinking not to feel, not to think, not to have to deal with the fact that I still had no idea who I was. I still had no identity. My identity was wrapped up in drinking and partying. And when I was drinking, I generally treated people horribly. You know, all my relationships were transactional. Every person that I dealt with, I had a relationship with, I had a friendship with, whatever it was. I was in that situation to get something out of them, to get what I could out of them. And a lot of those situations, they were in there to get something out of me. And when I was drinking and using, I didn't care. Because it allowed me to do that the way that I wanted to drink the way I wanted to use the way I wanted to, and to try to get away with things with impunity. A lot of things that weren't very awesome started happening, you know, destroying cars, run-ins with the law, you know, the same things that we hear a lot in Alcoholics Anonymous, which I don't necessarily think are that important to my recovery, but they're worth noting because I took those things not as signs that I was drinking too much, but signs that, you know, well, maybe I just shouldn't drive when I've had that much to drink. Or, you know, maybe I should just avoid being in an area where cops might be, because clearly they're the problems and they're too aggressive and out of control and they just need to leave me alone. Wanted them to do, I cut them out of my life, and I moved on to the next person to use them. I don't have a lot of friendships from years ago. You know, I don't have a lot of relationships with people I built at a young age that I can slip off to, because I would burn bridges and destroy those relationships, and I would just move on to the next person that I thought I could take advantage of. And, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous is showing me that was the root of my self-centered behavior. You know, that was, everything was about me. And if things affected me negatively, I played the victim. And I got really good at playing the victim. I got really good at convincing people that they should feel sorry for me. And just running through, back through that phase of getting what I wanted out of them. I got a relationship with a woman, with a kid involved. We became really serious, moved in together. My drinking changed to effect because she started to think that maybe this is not the best thing. And it started to become much more of a binge drinking situation, but it's like out of control to the point that I was drinking 24 hours a day, to the ending up sick enough that I was in hospitals, I was in and out of hospitals. Again, it was always somebody else's fault. It was always somebody else, something else. It was always the way she had treated me, the stress of having a kid. Anything I could point to other than alcohol. And I ended up, I remember talking to a therapist one time, and the therapist wanted to say, well, you know, what about how much you're drinking? I said, I'm not here to talk to you about that. That has nothing to do with anything. I never wanted to look at that because I had a job. I was paying bills. And I thought that was good enough. That whole situation came to a head when that woman decided she was going to leave, take my kid. And, you know, it wasn't the worst bottom or the worst situation that's ever happened to me, but it changed how I felt about everything. And I decided that they'd probably be better off without me. And there was no reason for me to keep doing this. I was sick of the pain. I was sick of feeling the way I was feeling. I was sick of alcohol not doing what it do for me any, what it used to do for me anymore. It just didn't work. I couldn't get drunk enough. And I was constantly sick to the point that I couldn't function. I wasn't, you know, that job that I was like, well, at least I've got this. I wasn't showing up for it anymore. I wasn't doing the things I needed to do to even be a useful family member. So I ended up in the hospital again. And this time, a nurse convinced me to go into a program. I got into the program and needed, at the same time, well, I got through that, I got introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous. I had gone to a couple meetings in my 20s because I thought, you know, maybe there's a problem with alcohol. But, you know, the running joke with the people I hung out with that, you know, I'm not an alcoholic because alcoholics are quitters. You know, and that was my attitude towards it. But anyways, I got introduced to it. I had no idea what I was going to get from Alcoholics Anonymous. My concept of it was maybe it's a bunch of old people sitting around, pissed off that they can't drink anymore, hating their lives, and they just sit in a room and talk about how much life sucks. But honestly, at that point, the way I was feeling, the pain and just the continuation of every, it was like Groundhog Day of just awful shit. It sucked and hurt and I couldn't do it anymore. So when I walked into that room of Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't know what was going to go on. When I walked in, people were talking about drinking like I drank, using like I used. Just getting into situations that I had been into, and they were laughing about it. They were in a good mood. There was people that were young, there were people that were old, and you know, I thought maybe this won't be so bad after all. I think at that first meeting I ever went to, when I look back at it now, I think some of my first spiritual experiences occurred in that room. The first one being that I was just going to sit there and listen. I had no intention of participating at all. And then they asked if there was any newcomers. My hand just went up. I said, you know, I'm Matt and I'm an alcoholic. I wasn't me. I had no intention of admitting anything to anyone. By the end of the meeting, everybody circled up and said a prayer. And I held hands. I grew up in a, you know, I didn't mention, sir. I grew up in a religious household. I must have said the Our Father a million times before. I didn't ever pay attention to what the person meant. But when we held hands, at the end of the meeting, and said it, I felt something. And at the end of the meeting, they said, keep coming back. And I thought, what do I got to lose? I keep coming back. So I started going to meetings. The third meeting I ever went to was a men's meeting. It was a crosstalk men's meeting. But there were a bunch of guys who didn't take any bullshit. They gave suggestions that were more... At least in my impression in my early sobriety was that if I didn't take that suggestion, there was going to be a problem. But those suggestions ended up saving my life. It was suggested that I get a sponsor. It was suggested that I get a big book. It was suggested that I read the big book. It was suggested that I try doing 90 and 90. And it was suggested that I get some phone numbers and start meeting some other alcoholics. As I did those things and I started going to more meetings, I started noticing that I was feeling different on the inside. I had much less shame about what I felt, who I felt I was and what I felt I had done. And I felt like for the first time in my life, I could be honest. I felt like I was sitting in a room of people that cared about what I was saying and cared about me, even though they had no idea who I was and didn't know me. And they certainly didn't say get out when I told them things that I didn't think I would ever tell anybody. Sorry, I'm losing my train of thought. As I worked the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I found a lot of things to be true about myself that I'd never even thought about looking at. When I went through the first step, the sponsor explained to me the unmanageability of my life while I was drinking. The obsession with alcohol while I was drinking, the fact that once I started drinking, I could not stop. As soon as I had a drink, I didn't know what was going to happen and where I would go and where it would end. But more importantly to me, my sponsor explained the unmanageability of what happened when my solution to the fact that I didn't have the manual was to drink and to use. That's how I coped with life. So when you took my solution away, what did I have left? And that was where the unmanageability really came in for me. I had no idea how to be a parent, how to be an adult, how to pay bills, how to be an employee, how to be a friend, how to have friendships with people where I wasn't looking for something out of them. I knew a little bit about AA, only to the extent that I knew they talked about God a lot, and I wanted nothing to do with that. And I used it as an excuse for a very long time not to ask for any help or not to try and find that. So when step two came around and I had to make a decision, I had to come to believe in a power greater than myself. And someone said to me early on, and it really stuck with me, that religion is for people that have been to hell, or that don't want to go to hell. I'm sorry. And spirituality is for people that have been to hell and don't want to go back. And that really struck a chord with me. That I could get down with that because it made sense to me. And so by the time I got to step three, it wasn't that hard for me to be able to say that there's a power out there that's that I can believe in that's greater than me. And it's not me. And I ran my life on self-will for so long. Getting to step four, it was the first time in my life I ever wrote things down on a piece of paper and looked at them and saw that every single situation where I'd acted like I was the victim or someone else hurt me or someone else was to blame, that I played a role in all of those things. I got to look at myself and really see where I fit into all that. And that was when my program really started to change. It really started to make sense to me that Alcoholics Anonymous was a lot more than just not drinking. You know, I've said that the drinking and the drug part was almost the easiest part of Alcoholics Anonymous, because staying sober and going to meetings wasn't super difficult for me. It was the other part of the program, the thinking that I was left with. You know, I had solved the drinking program, I think, pretty quickly, but the thinking problem is what I was left with. That whole idea that I was less than, that I couldn't fit in, and I didn't know where I belonged, that still existed. My first sponsor explained to me that the first step is the only step that talks about alcohol. The next 11 are about living life. And that was kind of eye-opening, that manual that I had wanted from a very early age was actually given to me in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's the first 164 pages of the big book. It's a design for living, and I came to find that. As I kept going through my program, I started finding a deeper connection with that higher power that I'd come to understand. When I had to list my character defects and look at what was inside of me that caused me to feel that I needed to drink to cover those things up, to hide from all of that. I knew that I wanted to change, that I wanted this program, I wanted what those people had, I wanted what they were trying to give me. And that led me to want to keep going. You know, I was terrified of the next step when I came into the rooms. I was like, how am I going to talk to people about this? And it really wasn't even that scary, you know, like writing it down and dealing with a sponsor, going, well, you know, I think the fifth step made it less intimidating for me. Because I talked to a sponsor and said all of the things that I had written down in my four step, and my sponsor didn't bat an eyelash. It was just like, okay, you know, it was either relatable or it wasn't even questioned. And we moved on. Humility was something that I had to learn in the seventh step. When I had to ask God to remove my higher power, to remove those defects that I no longer wanted. I had no idea how to pray or how to ask for something without it being for myself. So to finally sit down and ask to have those things removed was huge for me. 8 and 9, based right off of step four for me, I had my list of people that I needed to make amends with. I started making those amends and I started feeling the things clear out of myself. I started feeling some space open up and I was able to let this higher power into my life. And to be able to give myself will over, and allow this higher power to be the big book calls it my manager, that I was there to sign in the morning and be like, what are we going to do? Where are you going to take me? That will be done. Not mine. 10, 11, and 12 are steps that continue to help me grow. They continue, in this program, they help me, well, 10 especially, helps me to be able on a daily basis to see where I've made mistakes, to see where, I'm not doing the next right thing, and be able to fix that at the moment so I don't have to go back and make another worse step. 11 helps me build that conscious contact with that higher power that I've come to understand, which for me has become almost like a friendship. Like I get just to hang out and talk about things. And the other part of the 11th step is that meditation where I just have to be quiet and listen, wait for those answers. And the 12th step is working with other alcoholics. And that's something that changed everything that I learned incredibly. When I started working with another alcoholic for the first time, my program moved to a whole new level. I got to go through those steps from a whole other aspect. I got to see the lights come on in another alcoholic's eyes. And I got to really see this program in action the way it was supposed to be. I moved out to Visalia about a year and a half ago. I'll back up a little bit. So that same relationship that I had, when she had decided she was going to leave and take my son with her, we started working on those things. A year into sobriety, we got married. And she's in the Navy, so she got stationed out here in Lemoore, and we moved across the country in the middle of COVID. I got to move 3,000 miles from where I got sober and meet people in these rooms in a whole new town that were speaking the same language that I had learned to speak, that were talking about the same kind of recovery that I was talking about in other in meetings back east. They were talking about the language of the heart. And that was one of the things I forgot to say that earlier. When I came into AA and I heard people talking about things, I believed them. I'd mentioned before, I'd talked to therapists and things like that before. And I didn't want any of that clinical nonsense. I know you can read a book and get those things, figure that stuff out. But they didn't know anything about me, nor did I want to be honest with them or tell them anything. The difference when I came into these rooms was that people had really been dying. I was like, I'm going to be crying for my baby. Turn me off, sorry. They were saying things that had happened to them that I could relate to. Not so much the experiences of what they'd been through, because there were a lot of people that had way worse experiences than I had. And there were a lot of people that had not quite as bad experiences I had, or at least in my eyes. But what I could relate to was the emotions that they felt, the pain, the loneliness, the uncomfortability in their skin. And that's really what I started to feel in this program, was a camaraderie, was a kinship with people, and an understanding of how to deal with people in the outside world. When I first came into AA, there was a lot of signs on the wall or on tables or wherever they were. It was, one day at a time, let go and let God. These things that I looked at, I said, this is ridiculous. Silly stuff. I'd see bumper stickers and it drive me nuts. But those are the things that stuck with me. Those are the things that still are in my head. That when I'm having a tough day, when things aren't maybe going the way that I want to, that I remember those things. AA AA taught me to realize that other people have emotions, that other people have feelings. I don't think that I knew that before because it was all about me. It was all about how you made me feel, how I felt, what I thought. Why don't you treat me this way? Why don't you do this for me? And I haven't really started looking at how I treated the world around me. And when I did that, it made it easier for me to be around other people. It made it easier for me to be able to deal with different personalities. I had to learn patience. I had to learn tolerance. And all of those things were gifts from having that relationship with a higher power. Those aren't things that I was born with. That's not me normally. You know, the book talks about having a psychic change. And I believe that's what happened. My entire view of the world has become different. The way that I look at myself in it, the way that I look at other people. I've learned to forgive myself in this program. I've learned to try to love myself in this program, which is not a naturally easy thing to do for me. When I was going through my seventh step, one of the first things my sponsor said to me, that, you know, humanity is not a character. Or being human is not a character defect. And that was eye-opening, you know. I was the first person on my resentments. And it took a long time for me to be able to do that. But as I was able to forgive myself and to be able to move through that, it changed my relationship to the world around me. You know, today I get to be a partner. I get to be a father. I get to be an employer, but AA has given me the gift of being able to employ myself, which is kind of cool. I've gotten to like my employer, I guess. But I get those gifts directly as a result of working this program. And the only way that I can keep those things and the only way that those things will stay in my life is by being an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I need to put my recovery before everything else. If AA is not number one in my life, I lose all of that. I lose my wife. I lose my son. I lose my job. I lose my house. I lose everything that I've got. Because without that, there isn't, you know, the only thing I know without what I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous is to drink and use. And I stay active by going to meetings. I stay active by working with other alcoholics. I stay active by reading Big Book. A Big Book study meeting is a huge part of my recovery. I need to stay active in that book. I need to stay active with living the steps. 1, 2, and 3 are steps I can use in every aspect of my life. I can find unmanageability in everything. Not just my alcoholism. I can find it in relationships. I can find it in jobs. And in all those situations, the thing I need to do is to be able to accept that there's a power greater than myself and turn that over to that power. And it's gotten me through life. It's gotten me to where I am now. On a daily basis, I get up. I have a certain amount of readings I do. I have other alcoholics that I text. And I have time to be quiet and listen. Listen for those answers to the things that I've prayed for. That's another thing, is like learning to even pray in this program. I always thought, the only time I ever prayed when I was out active was not to a God. It was a 911 prayer. Just get me out of the situation, I'll never do that thing. But in 5 to 6 hours after that, I got out of whatever that was, I was back out doing exactly what I knew how to do. I never followed through on any of that. But what I've learned here, and the only thing the Big Book stuff that I'm required to pray for, is knowledge of my higher power's will for me and the power to carry that out. And that's pretty simple. You know, this program has been explained to me that it's a very simple program for really complicated people. And I love to complicate things. I love to overcomplicate the shit out of anything. But as long as I relax and listen and do the things that I've learned here, to continue to go to meetings, to continue to meet other alcoholics, to listen to their stories, to take the time to be a real friend and be quiet and hear what someone else has to say and share my experience with them, my life continues to change. One thing that I've heard continuously through people that have a lot more time than I do is that they need to remain teachable. And that's something that I need. I need to remain active in this program and willing to listen and willing to do things some way other than mine. I need to be aware of the experience that other alcoholics have have had in their recovery and learn how to utilize that in mine. I don't graduate from Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, it was terrifying for me when I walked in here to think, I'm never going to drink again. But I don't have to look at it that way. I know that I cannot safely drink. I know that I will forever be an alcoholic. But I only have to worry about not drinking one day at a time. It's, you know, it's 24 hours of just not picking up that first drink. And the Big Book tells me that I'm granted that daily reprieve contingent on my spiritual condition. You know, as long as I'm staying in conscious contact with my higher power, I'm not wrestling back my own will. It doesn't mean I don't try and wrestle back my own will. It doesn't mean that there's not bad days where I go back to things I know or I knew. But AA has given me a toolbox of ways that I can deal with those things. I have a big book that's got the answers to all of the problems in my life in it. The fact that it was written in 1935 and it still translates and makes sense in 2020 it's a divine gift in my eyes. You know, I have other alcoholics I can call and run situations by them. I have a sponsor that I can talk to who is more than willing to pick up the phone whenever I call and I have a problem. I have sponsees that call me that I can put my bullshit aside and listen to something else and get out of myself. And that's a huge, huge thing for me. You know, I easily get trapped up here, and it's a dangerous neighborhood to be in. Because I can convince myself of some pretty gnarly things if I'm not staying active in the program that I've been taught. Today, I'm grateful for just the small things that happen in my life on a regular basis that I never noticed before. I was thinking, you know, I never took the time just to look up when I was active. I never took the time to look around on me. I see things now. I see trees and flowers blooming. I get to, you know, I get to drive down the street here in Visalia, not in the summer because it's all gross and foggy out or whatever. I can't see the mountains. But in the winter, that's incredible to me. I mean, that's just, to me, it's a whole other world, and my eyes have opened in a new way to see that world. I went camping with my wife and my son a couple weeks ago. And they decided, you know, we went way up in the mountains away from anyone else. And so they went off to do some stuff just together. And I was sitting in our campsite, just me and my dogs, in the mountains and the wind. And I was sitting there and I looked around and I realized I was perfectly comfortable and happy exactly where I was, exactly at that moment. Perfectly quiet. And I don't remember a time in my life before Alcoholics Anonymous that I ever felt that way. I had to be trying constantly to get out of my own head, to not have to be me, to not have to feel anything. And today I can be present. Today I can be, like I said, I get to be a father, I get to be a husband, I get to be a friend. The gifts they're innumerable, and they just keep coming as long as I continue to work this program. Good days and bad days. It's still a gift because I'm not out there drinking and using. And that's about all I got. Thank you guys for listening.
So thank you, but we do still have a little bit of time in this. If you'd like to come up and take some questions. Come on, guys. Ask questions.
That's cool. I'll just keep talking. My name is Matt, not Todd. So I guess if you have questions. I play guitar and a punk band. And I check out with other bands, just working as a merch guy.
Hi, Tom. How are you? Hey, Tom. I talked about a total side exchange with a particular moment that you shared.
I think. think the moment I really felt that a psychic change had occurred was during my seventh step, which is when I needed to ask God humbly to remove my defects of character. I wanted to be somewhere where I felt like I could feel in touch with my higher power. I find my higher power in nature. So I sat outside, and while I was doing that, there's nothing in the forecast, nothing like that. It started raining. And I just felt more in touch, maybe with the universe and that I belonged here, than I ever had in my life. And I think it really opened my eyes to the fact that that I do have a place here, that I belong. And, you know, I talked about being able to see the world in a different way. And I believe that that was when I began to start seeing the world differently.
That, I think,
the book talks about lots of different kinds of spiritual awakenings. You know, Bill had a spiritual awakening where it was just a white light kind of burning bush moment for him. I haven't experienced those things. I feel that I continue to experience different spiritual awakenings. Sometimes small, sometimes larger. But there are situations that happen to me that I can't explain. And that, to be quite honest, I don't want to explain. You know, I just want to accept that they're there because something greater than me put that in my life. And that's the best way I can explain what happened to me. Hey, Martin.
I'm just starting my fourth step. That takes you very long, but that is a very process for you. I'm like, have to figure out about it. You know, we have this, the wall inventory, start to let stuff down. Is that just like a big deal for you? Or did you just...
When I first came into the rooms and I saw where I got sober, they had both the steps on either side of the speaker of most meetings I went to. It looked frightening. When I actually started doing it, I've been blessed to have a sponsor that is very kind and understanding and kind of walked me through it. And as I went through it, I didn't find it that intimidating. It was more autobiographical, I guess, in a sense, where I just got to write kind of the things that had happened to me. If anything, it was free. It was probably one of the more rewarding tasks I've done in working my steps. But also it's super eye-opening, like I was talking about, being able to write that. I guess it depends on how you do it with your sponsor, but doing a fourth column where I look at my role in all of the things that I've listed in my resentments, and getting to see where I played a part in all of that. You know, because I spent my life just being the victim and making people feel sorry for me. I was good at that kind of manipulation. So to be able to have to take a look at it that way, the steps in general changed my life. But each one, you know, had its own way of doing that. You know, it was explained to me when I started the steps that each step has a comma after it because it leads into the next, which is why we do the steps in order, which is why they're listed in order. But I needed to do that fourth step and get that out of the way, because there's no way I could have done six and seven and then to be able to make my amends without finding that place in there. So I think it can be intimidating, but step three for me is the rock of my program. Finding that higher power, being able to trust and have faith. You know, I was able to have faith that I was going to be guided through that. So I think it was a bit intimidating, but it was worth every little bit of intimidation, in my experience.
Thank you.
Yes?
And I'll pause. When did your family decide to take you back? Or not leave?
They decided not to leave when I committed to getting help. I was a year sober before we got married. It took me working the program and showing them that I was willing to commit to that, I think. I don't know that they really knew what Alcoholics Anonymous was either, So being able to explain that and kind of work through that together, it's an ongoing process. You know, I don't know that everything's wholeheartedly rebuilt. My amends to that relationship is a living amends. You know, which is another reason that I know that I'm exactly where I need to be. And I love how, Dr. Paul in Acceptance of the Answer talks about nothing happens in this world that God hasn't planned to happen. So I think that everything that's happening to me is happened for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
I got to be right where I am right now for that reason. And I'll continue to build that relationship with people around me, especially my family. I continue to do the next right thing. Anybody else? What was it? An amends that was the hardest for me to make? Honestly, I think that that for me right now, it's a living amends to my wife and my son. Because it's, you know, I have people in Alcoholics Anonymous that say that they see a change in me. I feel like I've changed. But I can't say to somebody else in my life, look at me, I've changed. You know, I have to show it, and I have to show that I'm continuing to do it. I also, you know, my sponsor pointed out, well, how long was I active for? How long was I treating them that way? How long was I doing this to other people? You know, we're talking like 11, 12 years of me acting one way and then saying, you know, well, I've changed now. You know, it's hard, but, you know, with the help of higher power, with the help of this program, I just continue to do the next right thing. So far, it's worked. You know, I can't really give advice, but I can tell you what's worked for me. And that's what I said. It's just to keep working the program. You know, when I started coming around, people say, meeting makers make it. Since then, I've heard meeting makers make it to meetings. There's a lot more to this than just meetings. You know, for me, it's being involved in that big book. You know, I mentioned that big book study that I'm in is a huge part of my recovery because I need to be in that book. It helps me working with other sponsees to be in the book, to be working through recovery constantly. I have to put my recovery first before everything else in my life. It's more important to me than anything else in my life because without it, I lose all this. So for me, that's what's worked, you know. It's being an active member. There's a couple guys who go to my home group, you know, and they say it every single meeting. But continuous sobriety requires continuous action, and I wholeheartedly believe that. Good. Well, thanks, guys.
We appreciate your share. That was great. The Valley Group encourages sponsorship and service to